So as you know, we've been spending some time remaking our holiday list. We talked about the fact that instead of buying more presents, that some of us might have resolved to be more present in the lives of others. And then last week I talked about the fact that if we are going to actually be more present in people's lives, we need to wrap that presence in something. So we decided to wrap the presence that we give to people. When we give undivided attention, we're going to wrap that presence in love. But I also said last week that often some of us have this illusion of somehow being able to pull off the perfect Christmas. And that was brought home to our family last week. As I was preaching about the illusion of a perfect Christmas, it was actually coming to fruition at home, where my husky decided to tip over the Christmas tree while I was at church. And so there she is in the back. I know it's kind of hard to see. Her ears are back. Her lips are pursed. She would not face the music. Needless to say, we have gotten that picked up, and we have blocked off that area where she cannot go back under the Christmas tree again. So even the illusion of the perfect Christmas was blown at our house. And so we move on this week. So I'm curious, how many of you have ever gone out to look at Christmas lights in your neighborhood or in somebody else's neighborhood? Okay, quite a few of us. When I was a kid, we after Christmas Eve, my dad was a pastor, so after Christmas Eve services and Christmas morning, we would go to Rockford, Illinois, where my grandparents lived. And we would go on Christmas Day, and we would often stay several days to celebrate the holidays with my grandparents. And one of the things we would always do is we would go drive around and look at Christmas lights after dinner in the nicer parts of town because they had the best lights. My brother and I would be in the back of the station wagon with the bench seat that faced back, but we still would look too. And we would enjoy the oohs and ahs of grandma and grandpa and mom and dad and looking at, look at that light and look at this. And it's just something we always did in the darkest part of the year. Lights are a part of the Advent and Christmas season, whether at home or at church. I mean, here we go. We have three of the four Advent candles lit. It is a little bit brighter this week. It is the pink candle this week, the candle of joy, telling us, hold on, you're almost there. A little bit more light is coming soon. It's a subtle message, but it's there, that the light is increasing, even though it seems pretty dark outside. And most of you know, this is not the only celebration of light that is happening around the world. It is Hanukkah right now. And they also celebrate the ever-increasing light as the menorah light candles are lit each night for 8 days. And it makes me wonder, when I look at our Advent wreath and I see a menorah, I can't help but wonder if we borrowed the traditions of Hanukkah to create an Advent wreath. And if you don't know the story of Hanukkah, it is quite fascinating. It is about a foreign power called the Seleucids. They invaded Israel. They occupied their land, and their leader, Antiochus IV, went into the temple of Jerusalem, the only temple, and desecrated it in horrible ways. This led to an uprising, a revolt within the Jewish people, and they expelled the Seleucids, and the temple was cleansed, and it was rededicated to God. And one of the objects in the temple that had been there since the beginning was a huge 7-branched candelabra. It was actually a lamp. It didn't hold candles. It was a lamp with 7 different lamps on it. And it stands about 5 feet tall. And it didn't burn candles, but it burned pure olive oil. Now, after they reconsecrated the temple, this consecrated oil was in low supply. They only had what was already in the candelabra, a 1-day supply at most. But when they lit those lamps, the miracle of Hanukkah was that the oil lasted 8 days. But there's more to the story. I think most of you might know that part of it already. But the menorah, which you can see a recreation of it up there in the top corner, that's a recreated version in Jerusalem of real size, is that they refer to the menorah as a symbol of light, and the sages of Jerusalem says that the light is really the light for the world. So the menorah's light is spiritual as well as physical illumination. And back when Israel had a temple, it is known that the windows within the temple were constructed differently than other windows of that time. They were wide on the outside, and they tapered in until they were narrow. See, the windows were constructed to let the light of God shine out rather than the sunlight lighten the temple. So the design of the menorah and the design of the temple was special to spread the light of godliness to the entire world and not just to illuminate the temple itself. The menorah, the light of God, was to shine outwards. But there's more to this. The center lamp in the menorah, not unlike our paschal candle or even our eternal candle back there, that was known as the lamp of God, the center one. And it burned every day, the center one, in the temple. And it was believed that the spirit and the wisdom of God rested upon Israel when that candle was lit, and it was meant to shine out to the world. And what do we know? That someone, that people, that dark forces tried to extinguish the light of God. So why would anybody want to do that in the first place? Why would anyone want to extinguish the light of God's presence from the world? Doesn't everybody want a little bit more peace and love and joy and hope in their lives? No, they don't. You see, the problem is this, is that God gets in the way of people doing whatever they want to do. Now, I find it fascinating that Jesus is absolutely crystal clear of his assessment of humanity when he was talking to a guy named Nicodemus, who was a Pharisee. And this is what he says. The verdict is this: light has come into the world, but people, and we'd say certain people, love darkness instead of light because their deeds were evil. Everyone who does evil hates the light, and they will not come into the light because the fear is that their deeds will be exposed. Clear assessment. Some people want to keep secrets. They want to keep others in the dark of the things that they have done because if it is discovered, their reputation will be ruined or worse. People like that who keep secrets and who do not want things exposed will do anything to keep the truth from coming out. Believe it or not, for some folks, darkness equals freedom and in the impunity and the latitude to keep doing whatever it is that they are doing. Seems like Jesus knows humanity pretty well. Then he contrasts it with a whole nother group of people when he says this, same next verse, he says, "But whoever lives by the truth comes into the light, so that it may be seen plainly that what he has done has been through God." Now, don't misunderstand me. We all make mistakes. We all do dumb things on occasion through the things we say and do. But when we contrast these two types of people, there are one group of people who embrace the truth, who embrace the light and say, "Look, I'm going to make mistakes, and I'm going to be in the dark occasionally, but I absolutely recognize that I need the light to guide my way, and I need God to forgive me when I'm in those dark moments." In other words, some people don't want to live perpetually in the dark, and they're willing to face the fact that they need help. Then there are some people who just prefer to stay in the dark. And worse than that, they hate the light of truth because it will expose failure and fraud and imperfection. Because this is not about perfection. It's about a way of life, really. Do you welcome the light when darkness comes? Or do you run away from it because it'll expose a pattern of darkness and manipulative behavior to keep others in the dark too? I mean, we have, thanks to Melody, we have King Herod from the elementary school program. And I asked if I could borrow, so thank you. Is, you know, we think about the birth story, and what do we see but someone trying to extinguish the light? And God says, not so fast. So this is the time we talk about such things as light and dark. You know, and I hope I'm not being overly prophetic when I say we're coming into the two darkest weeks of the year. The winter solstice is upon us. And in some small way, we and our Jewish brothers and sisters are rebelling against the darkness by lighting candles. How about that? Spiritually speaking, by lighting candles, we are inviting the light and the presence of God to surround us in the darkest part of the year. And it might seem silly to you to think that we can vanquish darkness with a few candles, but I'm going to tell you that one light can make a big difference. For example, there was a pilot who was flying his single-engine airplane and late in the day, and he was flying back home to the home airport, small county airport, and he waited too long to get back, and by the time he had arrived, the field was dark because the sun had dropped behind the mountain, and he couldn't see the runway. The county airport doesn't really have lights, and by then the air traffic controller had gone home for the day because small airports aren't manned all the time. He tried to circle again and try to see if he could see, but by then it had gotten darker, and he was kind of out of luck. For 2 hours, he flew circling, but to no avail did he ever see the runway, and he finally got to the point where he realized, you know, he's probably just going to run out of gas, and then the end would come. But as he got more and more scared, something happened. Someone on the ground continued to hear the sound of this little airplane engine circling over and over. And this person put it together that this plane was trying to land and couldn't. And so this gentleman mercifully drove his car back and forth on the runway to show where the airstrip was. And after doing that several times, he parked at the end of the runway and put on his high beams so that this airplane could land. It's imagery for one light can make a difference. Maybe instead of going to see Christmas lights, maybe this year that we be the light. Of course, we're not the light of God, but Jesus gives us the light as if it were our own. Because remember what Jesus said earlier today in our gospel reading. Put your trust in the light while you have it, so that you may become children of the light. So we can be the light because it is Christ who gives it to us, and it is Christ who guides us if we're willing to trust that. But there's good news and bad news to being the light in the world. The good news is each of us have an opportunity to light someone's way. Someone who is struggling without hope, it can be just about anybody, and it can be as simple as inviting someone to Christmas Eve services, or as simple as buying a can of soup that has a pop-top lid so someone can eat. It may be as difficult as walking with someone who is spiritually lost, and that you can shine a light to a path that might be better for them. That's the good news. Sometimes there's bad news with being the light. I've already touched on it. There are forces out there who don't want the light to guide them. And they want to do their own thing, and they will do whatever they can to extinguish that light. To extinguish love and hope and joy and peace, and I would even add common sense. They want to extinguish that too. We have been called to protect that light. Not to hide it, but to protect it. No matter what, you need to know the promise of Scripture tells us that the light will endure. Now, I learned something this week that probably all of you already know. And you're going to roll your eyes when I tell you this. But I thought it was fascinating. Back when Thomas Edison invented the light bulb in 1879, it was obviously revolutionary. 22 years later, as this technology became more commonplace, specifically 1901, one of these newfangled light bulbs was installed at the Livermore Fire Department. Did you know this? Some of you know this. Like, it's common knowledge here. I'm a newbie, right? And that light bulb has been lit and it has not burned out, and it is still lit today. The same light bulb. I went online, they have a webcam. So if you want to just sit and watch the Livermore light bulb, you can. Same light bulb. A normal life light bulb says that this should have burned out over 900 times. But yet, it has never burned out in 117 years. That light bulb was made by a company called the Shelby Electric Company. And you've probably never heard of them because they never became one of the giants of light bulb making because they made their light bulbs so good, no one ever reordered. They went out of business. How about that? John says, the light shines in the darkness, but the darkness has not understood it or overcome it. In the end, this light, the light of Christ, will shine brightly everywhere. But in the meantime, be a revolutionary. Light a candle. Defy the darkness. Charge into the darkness. Be an agent of truth and love and endure like that Livermore light bulb, because Christ is coming. Amen.